Cheers, thanks. The first last time I was in Hull was 26 years ago. I was a graduate or new placement student working for BP in Saltend. So it was great this morning to see how Saltend is regenerating and changing. I worked on the DF lines down there making acetic acid. So how things have changed now I've come into metals. Just a little bit of introduction to Valet first, because most people haven't heard of us, and then a little bit about how we're decarbonising and the role that algae is helping us play in that. So that's our site. As you can see, always sunny in Wales. Never rains, and all our pictures have the sun, because it always is sunny. We've been there a little while on site, 122 years now, so it's been there a while. The only nickel refinery in the UK and only one of three in Europe, so we are of a limited stock as well. Vale, large mining company, global, mainly iron ore in Brazil, 115,000 people worldwide, and we stay in over five continents, and we produce around 20% of the world's nickel supply, so it's fairly significant. We're one of the top three mining companies. Our little operation in Clilloch in Wales is in the middle of the map, as it always should be. And we have, for 100 odd years of our life, we had all our nickel come in from Canada, from mines in Sudbury, Ontario. And over the last couple of years, we've transitioned to pretty much entirely Indonesian feeds, so coming from Indonesia. And that was quite a challenge in itself to move feeds after 100 odd years of on one feed. So we come to Clilloch Refinery. As I said, locally we're often known as the Mond. So if you ever come down to Swansea and ask for Vale or Valley, you'll probably get blank faces. Vale, you may get a few more. If you say the Mond, everyone's, oh, I know that. And we'll happily take you. Every taxi knows where the Mond is. We were built by Ludwig Mond at the turn of the century. 1902 was first production. So we've been there a long time, long established site. So we have our issues for decarbonisation of how we decarbonise the site. And we use the Mon nickel carbonyl process, which I'll go into a little bit more detail now. As a site, though, we have 193 employees, 45 full-time contractors, around 40 kilotons of nickel production a year, which is a couple percent of the world's requirements. Pellet and powder are our products, and we operate 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. We have over 280 customers in over 30 countries. Most people never heard of us because we're just a raw material into other things. And we'll go into some of our stuff later on. Some of the 280 customers are a little bit hides where our nickel ends up, because a good chunk of those 280 customers are distributors, and some of those will have over 1,000 customers, which our nickel will go into from there. So our nickel goes far and wide. In our process, we have a steam methane reformer. All this kit was built 1958, 60s, into early 70s. So this is all relatively old equipment as well, which again has its own challenges in not only maintenance, but in decarbonisation. I believe it's probably the largest steam methane reformers in Wales. And we make around 3,000 metre cubed hydrogen. So although we talked a lot about hydrogen this morning, I'm not actually talking too much about the hydrogen today. We also make carbon monoxide and CO2. And so although I can go to green hydrogen, I still need carbon monoxide, because our process of processing nickel, we make this lovely gas called nickel carbonyl gas. And for those chemists, you'll see there's four carbon monoxides attached to that nickel. And what that reaction does, it takes nickel metal and converts it straight to nickel gas at room temperature and atmospheric pressure. So I don't need to make molten metals to separate my nickel. Also don't need solution based like you get with HPAL and that sort of stuff at pressure. So I can do an atmospheric pressure, generally 50, 60 degrees, and I can separate nickel from mixed metals and then make a 99.9% pure product. The benefit of nickel carbonyl gas is when you heat it to about 240 degrees, it'll convert back to nickel, and that's how we get our separation. So it's a very clean, elegant process, but is always tied to carbon because I need the carbon monoxide. So our product, nickel powders and nickel pellets. This is why no one knows heard of us, because no one ever uses or sees these products. But if you look at what they become coins, they become jet engines, they become car batteries. A Tesla will have 60 kilos of nickel within its battery. So although Tesla always said they're lithium batteries, they're really one part lithium, 8, 9, 10 parts nickel. So they're nickel batteries. But they're also nickel cadmium batteries. They're in your phones, they're in your jewelry, nickel's in your jewelry, it's everywhere. So this is why we are everywhere, but no one knows about us. So our commitments as a company, we had a 33% reduction in GHG emissions by 2030, carbon neutral by 2050, very similar to a lot of other companies around. We've also got 100% self-generation of clean energy globally by 2035, which is going to be a challenge. But we did put over $2 billion US to be invested to achieve these goals over the next coming years. So we're certainly putting money into the challenges. Some of our challenges, as we've seen today from sort of this sector, there's a nice big carbon storage system off the coast. South Wales, we don't have that at the moment, so we don't have a good storage system. So we're either looking at shipping or utilization, which is where I'll come into in a minute. The equipment's old, it's 1960s, 70s technology. Not always the easiest to decarbonize. It was never designed for anything to be that. So how do we still use that equipment and decarbonize? We have a large number of emission points on site. So I have 25 different emission points due to the number of burners and other things I have. So I have a lot of different distributed sites around my site. So I'm almost like a little mini cluster on the site trying to decarbonize the different plants in different areas. It wasn't set up as a way of bringing it all into one area. I require CO on site, so I'm always going to be tied to CO2 production somewhere on the line because the CO is always going to end up with CO2 at some point. Nickel's a great catalyst in our process, and so it does turn the CO back into CO2 as well, which is a bit of frustrations. Wide range of gas compositions, depending where the different emissions are coming from, and we're in a globally competitive market, so I can't just dump a load of cost into Clydach for carbon capture and storage or shipping, because I'll just put myself in a difficult position. We're also remote from our ore sources. We don't have nickel ore in the UK, so I need to be cost competitive while getting the ore from elsewhere. So that's about the site, a little bit about Valley. If I go about how maybe algae can help us, as you say, it's always sunny in with us. Algae, well, it's one of nature's natural rock stars. It absorbs CO2 for fun. So it'll absorb 2 tons of CO2 will make 1 ton of algae. So it really does absorb CO2 nicely. There's hundreds of thousands of strains of algae, but within those algae, they've got lots of different useful chemicals and elements to them. And some of them have really high value and have some high value applications as well, which I can discuss a bit later. So really are a very unique product. So where did our journey start? So 2019, I got talking to Swansea Uni and they were looking for a demonstrator site to build a little biorefinery using biofences to take industrial CO2 and grow algae and then purify the algae into high value products. So it's part of South Wales Industrial Cluster, so we sort of came together and collaborated. Started building the site in January 2020. Little did we know what would happen in February, March 2020. So it got a bit delayed, but we did manage to get it built by about mid-2020. And then for the next couple of years, they were taking our CO2, growing algae, and then separating out the algae. And the bottom picture, you can see lots of different elements that they're in the algae from A is the algae, the spirulina, so that's the sort of stuff you may see in your health food shop that people spoon into their smoothies in the morning. But then as you separate out, you can get different lipids, proteins, and then fuel lipids right at the end. The pictures at the end are pigments, which I have some here as well, so if people want to see me afterwards, I can show you. From some of the algae, especially spirulina, you get this lovely blue. So spirulina is green, but somehow it makes this blue pigment. And if you like your Haribo or your blue Smarties, that's what that is. But it can also be used in makeup and other things as well. Lovely blue color. Worth a fair bit of money. This pink stuff, which, when properly purified, can go to medical grade, and will and that's worth a lot of money, but can be used in tests for heart attacks and things like that. So that was there. If we want to look at what it looks like. Polytunnel, see, snow, but still sun. They've got, and they have their little nursery, so they grow their algae in the small bit. Then they go to the big fences where they grow, and then they harvest them, separate them out, and make the different products. That site now has been taken over by a company called Algae Products International, and they are starting to develop it more on a commercial basis. So they're starting to develop the separation of these high-value products and actually getting them purified up to the right levels and developing the markets and relationships with markets to build it, especially when you go into pharmaceuticals. The source of the, although the pigments are the same as the ones they use now, the source is different, so they have to go through all the right regulatory procedures. So that's what they're working with now. And they're working to develop those, and we're also working with them to develop a contract for them to operate on our site in a sort of symbiotic way. Because it's fine when you're making CO2 on a bit of a collaboration agreement, but when you start doing it commercially, our site works 24/7, we try to, but sometimes we don't run. And so what happens then with the CO2 and them making their stuff? So it's getting the right collaboration agreement, the right agreements, so we can have these symbiotic relationships that work for both parties. The only thing we had from this then is those fences we use in sunlight. How do we really scale that up? Because it wasn't using huge amounts of CO2, but at least it was a profitable way of using CO2. And I think for us, utilization is far better to use the CO2 or the carbon, because we can't store it anywhere very easily. So if we want to do it at scale and use all our CO2 on site, I didn't have enough space to put all those sort of fences. And it works well in the summer, not so well in the winter. Doesn't work at night when I'm running. So what do we do? So this started a collaboration then with a company called Remediate, and they're looking at photobiotic bioreactors. So this is reactors with LED lighting built into the reactors, so they can run 24/7, day, night, winter, summer, in buildings, wherever. And they also believe that their productivity will be about 50%, 50 times greater than the biofences we were using already. So what we've done for this so far, we're currently building the 4-tank demonstration plant on site. We've got an old building, we've put it into the building. They're about 4 weeks away from starting the commissioning of that site. And they're also carrying that site to how to take all the CO2 from our site into one plant and make fish and cattle feed. So for them, because it's a bigger scale, they're not looking at the high value stuff, but they can still make good margins on fish food. The benefit of using fish food is at the moment they use soy from Brazil, so it's displacing deforestation of the rainforest, but also the carbon content of that soy is high embedded, so it's much lower counterfactual. The other benefit is the fish normally eat algae, so the fact they've eaten this algae for salmon, the colours I was just showing you is what gives the colours in the flesh of the salmon. If they use soy, they have to put colourants into the soy to make the fish the flesh colour. By using algae from this, it comes naturally as it does in the wild. So some other benefits there as well. And what does that look like? So some drawings there, and then on the right you've got some pictures of the site as it's being built now. So definitely a step up on the industrial scale with stainless steel tanks and that. So I'm really looking forward over the next 12 to 18 months how this is going to develop and does it really deliver what we think it does. If it does, this could be a solution for us to decommissionize. You could take all our CO2. We do have other ideas then around how to make a green hydrogen for our sites and even a greener CO, which then with this technology could drop us to that carbon negative place as a site. Similar to what we saw with the Teesside and what they're doing by using the biogenic carbon sources and this carbon capture system with utilization, that could really drive us down. So it gives another option for sites that maybe storage and isn't so easy, but in a profitable way as well. And that's what I managed. There we are.